Beth Ann Patrick has attempted to lasso together a huge subject: how man's attempted to civilize himself through manners, aka rules of engagement at the table and elsewhere. With the occasional tongue-in-cheek, she's written an uncommon history of common courtesy. Beth Ann, good to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Lynn. It is great to be here.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about this because you've been studying courtesy, and I think most of us think we know what it means, but what did you find it means?
Well, the thing that I found about courtesy is that we have different rules about it, and we call those rules manners, but basic courtesy is really the same almost everywhere. It's about how you treat others, and almost everywhere as well, Lynn, it's about thinking about other people before you think of yourself, thinking of their comfort before you consider your own comfort. That's true in almost every, I'm not an anthropologist, I'm not a sociologist, but in everything that I researched, that's what I found. The golden rule is not something that is only Judeo-Christian. There have been versions of it all around the world for thousands of years.
You said something in the book that was very striking to me. You pointed out that so many different parts of the world have something that they traditionally say when they sit down to a meal.
That's right.
And we don't.
I don't know why we simply, Lynn, do not say good appetite, because that's what the other cultures say. Of course, we all know from our beloved Julia Child here in the U.S. that the French say bon appétit. In Germany, they say guten appetit, and people say gleichfalls, meaning likewise. Buen provecho, if I'm saying that with the correct accent, is something that's often spoken in Latin American and Spanish countries. So all over the world, people will say at the beginning of a meal, you know, eat well, have a good appetite. Maybe we're a little bit shy about saying that as English speakers. You know, it could be because England and France have been in a rivalry, both formal and informal, for hundreds of years. It could be because we just found it to be a little bit old-fashioned. But it's a shame, because I think it's wonderful to say to your fellow companions and diners that, you know, you want them to eat well and heartily.
It is odd that we don't do that. But what are some of the most striking food customs that you found?
Well, there are so many. The first one I'm going to tell you about is a Burmese custom, and this has to do with saying you're welcome. And I'm really interested in this because, you know, we say you're welcome, it's simply a phrase. But in Burma, in certain parts of the country, when you send around an invitation, let's say to the celebration of a baby's birth or to a wedding, what will happen is the houses in the village that accept the invitation will then receive a delivery from the person who invited them of a pickled tea leaf salad. Now, I don't know if I'm saying this correctly. It's known as lahpet, L-A-H-P-E-T, although the spelling varies sometimes as well. And it sounds delicious. I have not tried it, but it is something that the person doing the invite sends out to say, thank you so much for accepting my invitation. It's a sort of your welcome gift. So that was one that I absolutely loved. Another one that I think is really fun is why our bread knives are blunt. And that actually has a couple of different interpretations. It's the same time period, 17th century France. Now, some people say that that was because the king didn't want fighting with pointed objects at the table. And of course, that makes a certain amount of sense. But there is also another story about that. And that's at the same time that Cardinal Richelieu, who is quite well known in history, decided too many of the people at the court were picking their teeth with their knives. And so he decided that the blunt ends would make people look a little less savage while they were at the table. He was trying to make things a little bit more refined.
What about gifts? Because
oh, yes.
I remember something about in Japan, there were traditions.
Japan has etiquette that is really very formalized. And I use etiquette rather than manners because etiquette, which is a word from the French from the 17th century, is all about how you formalize a hierarchy, treating people in a hierarchy. So in Japan, you know, you have different rules for the kinds of gifts you would give to your boss than to the kind of gift you would give to a family member, for example. So let's say you're invited to a business dinner in Japan. You know, an American might say, well, I'm going to go out and buy one of those funny little packs of cocktail napkins with a joke on them, and that'll be a lovely gift. Not so if you're going to a dinner party in Kyoto. You really probably are best off going to a department store where they have a section for gifts for hostesses, because in Japan, the presentation is far more important than the gift. And, you know, you can give something very lovely, a good bottle of scotch, a set of, you know, lovely linen dinner napkins, something like that. But the way it's wrapped and the way that the wrapping is presented is more important than whatever's inside. And one of the things that I like about this is that they also have a tradition, although the wrapping may seem very elaborate and we think, you know, why bother? Often that elaborate wrapping is reusable. The Japanese have one kind of wrapping called furoshiki, and those are sort of oblongs of cloth. They can be really beautiful. They can be anything from a humble print to a gorgeous piece of silk. And the way that the furoshiki is tied often has messages and symbolism. You know, you can say congratulations with one kind of knot and, you know, condolences with another and that sort of thing.
So interesting, Beth Ann. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Lynn.
Beth Ann Patrick is author of An Uncommon History of Common Courtesy.